Welcome to Life and Sirens, Behind and On the Scene, a podcast by First Responders. We're your hosts, Sophie,
Jamie,
and Aubrey.
The content provided in this podcast is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered medical advice. The views and opinions expressed by the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the official policies or positions of any medical institutions, emergency medical services, or healthcare organizations. Patient privacy is a top priority, and all discussions involving real-world emergency situations are de-identified and altered to ensure confidentiality. Always consult with a qualified healthcare professional or your local EMS protocols before making any decisions regarding patient care or medical practices. Listener discretion is advised, as some topics may include discussions of real-world emergency situations.
Welcome to another episode of Life and Sirens. We are going to talk about blood and Welcome to another episode of Life and Sirens. We're going to be talking about blood products and TXA. First, before we get into all that fun stuff, we're going to talk about hemorrhagic shock, things like that. And then we're also going to get into shock index. I think that that's becoming a really big thing that we are starting to factor in. So let's kick things off with hemorrhagic shock. So hemorrhagic shock, as we all know, this is a very preventable cause of pre-hospital death, and we're doing our best to try to combat this, but we don't always have the best tools.
So hemorrhagic shock, it's going to have four different classes. So if you're in class one or stage one, that's going to be 0 to 15% of blood loss. And I know that you guys are looking at all the blood on the floor in the middle of a trauma and being like, I think that's about 15%. But just hear me out. If it's like, that's some blood, but not a crazy amount, that's going to show minimal to no symptoms. Your patient's going to be able to compensate with that pretty well. Class two or stage two is going to be 15 to 30% of blood loss. So at this point, you're looking and you're being like, that's some blood. They're going to be tachy. They'll have narrowed pulse pressures, and their blood pressure is probably going to be like within a normal range. And then three, you got class three. That's 30 to 40% of blood loss. So at this point, you're going to have a patient that is like pretty significantly showing signs of hypoperfusion. So they're going to be hypotensive. They're going to be confused, and they're going to have marked tachycardia. So it'll be sustained and very noticeable. And then your last one's going to be class four. This is going to be greater than 40% of your blood volume.
Which is so much, guys. Like, this is how much it takes.
That is a lot of blood. They're going to be profoundly hypotensive. And oftentimes at this point, they will be unconscious.
Yes, this is almost always nearly fatal. Mm-hmm.
That's a huge amount of blood volume. And so how many liters of blood do we have in our body?
Well, it depends on the person. But what do we say? Five now for women?
Six for men? I think it's 5 to 6. Women to men, and then based off your like general body habitus as well.
So when we talk about this hemorrhagic shock class, like obviously these are pretty vague, like, oh, hypotension, tachycardia, confusion, whatever. Okay, yes. But the most like, or I should say one of the biggest standards right now and what we're moving towards, and if you're not using it, you're probably going to see it, is the shock index. So this is a very big critical care metric. So what is shock index? Does anybody know the calculation?
Heart rate divided by your systolic blood pressure.
Correct.
Which, have you noticed that ESO calculates it for you now?
Yes, it does do that now.
On every patient?
Every single
cool.
patient That's gets
really
a shock.
Cool.
Yeah.
Gets a shock index. Normal shock index is less than or equal to 0.7. Values above 1 or 1 or greater, 1.0, indicate a 50% increased risk of mortality, even if your blood pressure is normal. And I think that this is something we talk about. There's other reasons, like you could have a normal blood pressure in the setting of shock. So just keep that in mind. That is why we've been moving towards calculating shock index as a good indicator of when we need to help these patients out with maybe blood products. So let's give us an example here. Aubrey, you have a patient with a heart rate of 120. They have a blood pressure of 100 over 70. What is your shock index?
Let me pull out my trusty calculator. It would be 1.2.
1.2, that's correct. And is that low or high risk?
That's pretty high. That is above one, so it's not looking good.
See, it doesn't take too much, like, for you to be an elevated shock index.
Yeah, and we've all had those patients that look totally fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we're like, I don't know, like,
it's soft.
Maybe.
It's a soft pressure. Yeah. Okay, do the shock index. We love numbers. So why does this even matter? Well, shock index is a big ticket item for if we're deciding if a patient needs massive transfusion. So we, for a long time, have been, like I said, just looking at blood pressure, and that's just not cutting it anymore. So we like to do our math, of course. We like to make things hard for you, but it's really not that hard. What is the shock index calculation again?
It is heart rate divided by systolic blood pressure.
Perfect. So if your shock index is greater than 1.3, mortality is upwards of 60% without any intervention. Obviously,
dang,
that is too high. So we need to do something about that. And then a lot of times now, we're seeing shock index taken into consideration for when we're leveling traumas. So it depends on how your service or state does trauma leveling. We don't level people on scene in our state, but I know some people do. So let's talk about a scenario.
You arrive on scene at an MVC rollover. The 28-year-old male has a heart rate of 140 and a blood pressure of 106 over 72. The blood pressure is normal, right? I mean, it's within normal range. It might raise some eyebrows, but still considered normal. But their shock index is going to be 1.32.
Ooh, that is very high.
I love that it says that.
I know. In our notes, we have, this patient is circling the drain. We're here for the dramatics.
So that's just like, you could have a young, healthy person and they may need significant help.
So if you have one of these patients and you do carry some products that are some good interventions, we want to know kind of why we use them, right?
Absolutely.
Right. So what's an example of something that some services probably carry?
The thing that you'll see that everybody has accessibility to is saline or LR.
Right. So what does saline or LR not have?
Oxygen carrying capabilities.
Right. What else do they not have?
Clotting factors. Oh, man.
Woo, buddy. Right. So our isotonic solutions, they are great for increasing our volume. And sometimes you do just need a little bit of volume in order to push around all the things that are going to do what you need them to. But it doesn't give you any increased oxygen carrying capacity. You don't have any clotting factors. And so sometimes it can really just wash out the things that you do have. But that, nevertheless, is what most people have.
Yes, but don't be afraid to give fluids. Like, all of us are dehydrated. It's okay to give them fluids, but don't just, like, dump all the fluids.
Absolutely.
I mean?
There's plenty of studies that show that giving excess of 2 liters of normal saline or LR to a trauma patient has a negative outcome, especially if they require surgical intervention, and most of them do.
But some people may just need, especially if you have controlled hemorrhage, like there's no more bleeding, like it's an external injury and there's no more bleeding, they might just need a little bump.
A little bump.
For sure. For sure. There's definitely a place for it. And if it is all you have.
That's all you got.
It is all you have. Mm-hmm. We can read as many studies as we want, but if that's all you got, then you let somebody have a blood pressure of 50 and perfuse zero things, or maybe at least give them a chance to move some things around.
Yeah.
Until Amazon drones start getting really capable at delivering while transporting.
Man. Don't give away your secrets.
I know.
Would be pretty nifty.
Would be great.
Call in the blood drone.
Honestly.
Dun, 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 dun.
That sounds pretty cool.
So there are some options on other things that you can carry to help control, or really not control. Well,
mitigate.
Yeah, mitigate hemorrhage, play a factor in making it less bad. What are those things?
What is TXA for 500?
Right. So one thing that a lot of services, well, I won't say a lot, but a good amount of services have started recently carrying, and I won't even say recently, some have had it for years, but it's gotten more popular, is TXA, which is tranexamic acid. And so TXA, the way that it functions, just a very basic understanding of how it functions, is when you have an injury or hemorrhage, your body is going to want to form a clot, and that is how we stop bleeding. So that is going to be with fibrin and platelets, which is another reason why if you wash out everything with a bunch of saline, clotting gets not good. But so you're going to have platelets and fibrin. They're going to form a mesh that is going to form a clot. T TXA, its goal is to make sure that your body doesn't naturally break up that clot because it wants it to stay. And so the way it does that, traditionally, your body has something called plasminogen that is going to bind to the fibrin. It'll change that plasminogen into plasmin, and that's what's going to break up the fibrin, and that's what will eventually break up your clot. There's a lot of nuance to biological processes, but this is the basic overview. And we want to stop that process. So what TXA does is there is a receptor on plasminogen that is a lysine receptor. And then your fibrin has little lysine flags that hang off of it. And that's how plasminogen normally binds to fibrin. So what TXA does, it's an analog to the lysine. And so it can bind to that receptor. And basically then plasminogen can't bind to fibrin. So it cannot convert itself to plasmin. And so that fibrin never gets broken down and your clot stays.
And if your brain doesn't work at the capacity that Jamie's does, very few do, because dang, that was crazy. TXA does not form new clots.
No, it does not.
Say it with me.
TXA does not form new clots.
It just preserves the ones that are already there.
Absolutely. It basically comes in as like a clot guardian.
There you go.
So it rolls in and it's like, no, no, homies, don't touch my friends. And it does that until ideally that clot has stopped whatever hemorrhage you have.
TXA's the bouncer.
Yeah, it's a bouncer of the club. Can't get in. So that is TXA's like general function. That's what we want it to do, right? So there are some guidelines to how you administer it. A lot of times TXA is used in like thoracic trauma for things that are more internal that we cannot control externally. And you want to give it within 3 hours of the initial trauma.
But ideally within 1 hour.
Yes. And it's going to be far more functional. As you pass that 1 hour mark, it becomes less and less effective.
Right.
So there's a lot of studies about TXA. There's so many. Some people carry it pre-hospitally. Some people don't. Some people think it works. Some people don't think it does. The initial study that really got TXA like on the map is the CRASH II study. And basically that showed that if patients were administered TXA, they had a lower mortality at 28 days than patients that weren't administered TXA that had a hemorrhagic event. CRASH III was the next study, and that looked at TXA administration in TBIs, which was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. It also showed a decreased mortality in patients after 28 days, which is pretty nifty. They're both statistically significant. They have good p-values. Like, we are rocking and rolling with these studies. And their like patient selection, I think, was like 20,000 patients. Mm. Which is cool. What I do think is interesting about both of those studies is that most of the countries that they were done in, I think it had a total of, the first one I think had a total of 33 countries, and the second one had like 21 countries, or vice versa, but it was quite a bit. And most of those countries had a trauma system that was either not like up to standard or was in its infancy. So most patients did not have immediate access to surgical intervention and blood products. So I think that's interesting.
Hmm.
The next study that we're talking about is going to be the PATCH trial. And what that looked at is in the United States was also the pre-hospital administration of TXA. And then those patients would be followed by an infusion. And then you had placebo group that had the same hemorrhagic events but did not receive TXA. In those two groups, the statistical significance is that there was no difference. And so you can look, there's like a 1.15% chance that you will have a lower mortality with TXA, but it's not considered a statistically significant difference. And in those patients, they did show like a slight better chance at the 28-day mark, but at the 6-month mark, it was a moot point. They had the same mortality.
This crashed the crash studies.
It did crash the crash studies. Yeah. But the nuance here that is really cool about studies and why it's a good thing to pay attention to where they're done and how they're done and if they like controlled for certain variables and things like that is because the PATCH trial was done in the United States, where people often have very quick or at least quite quicker access to trauma systems, to advanced trauma systems and to blood products, surgical interventions, things like that. And then the crash studies were done in countries that did not have advanced trauma systems. And so you can look at, if you have access to that surgical intervention and blood products, TXA doesn't make a huge difference. But if you don't have access to it, it does make a difference.
Can you define access to? Like, what's the time frame we're looking at?
So really, you want to be able to get to your trauma center. Like, it still kind of operates in that, like, golden hour scenario. So we want to be able to get there, like, within an hour.
Okay.
That's kind of what we're looking at. And that is, like, definitive level trauma care.
And that's also something you have to think about is how effective would this be in places that, like, there was any kind of pre-hospital care? Like, I know you're saying, like, or even hospital care, because what kind of hospitals are they going to once they receive this medication? We don't even know.
Right. So what you're looking at now is kind of a cool variance in the United States of, like, there are places that an ambulance is a 3-hour response time. And so, like, you have to land helicopters, and these patients have almost no immediate access. And so in those areas, in super rural places, and honestly not even super rural, but, like, greater than 45 minutes, TXA could possibly show some significant benefit. But in, like, city or, like, urban systems where you have a level 1 trauma center or a level 2 trauma center, like, very readily accessible to you, like, in 15 minutes or less, then it's really probably not going to make a huge difference in your patient outcome. Now, the interesting part is I think everyone's generally agreed that if you have a really long access to trauma center, it's probably better to try to keep clots than to not. If you have a really short access to trauma center, then we're probably good just hitting the gas and getting us there, right? If you're in the middle, where you have that, like, 15 to 45 minute transport, like, you don't really know. Depends on where you are, what your access point looks like, what time of day it is, all of these things. That's, like, the question mark. Do you carry TXA? Do you not? What do you do? What do you guys think?
I think that the only option, no, I'm just kidding. I think the best option and my favorite option is whole blood. I think, like, come on, guys, we're making it way harder than it should be.
For sure. And so a lot of these studies about TXA were, like, basically, did this get the patient to either definitive surgical intervention or blood product administration? So blood product was on the same level with, like, our variable groups of surgical intervention.
Yes.
And so if we have a choice, blood's always better. There was also some other studies done, like the NIH, that was cool about TXA use in postpartum hemorrhage. And it was very similar outcomes of data, is that if you were in a region or a country that has minimal OB services and your access to them are poor to zero, then TXA can be quite beneficial in postpartum hemorrhage. If you are in a system that has pretty swift access to OB services, then it doesn't show much of a difference in mortality rate. And in the NIH study, it also didn't show a significant increase for clots between the two patient groups, between the TXA and the placebo, which is good news for administering TXA. The risk is not quite as high as I think we think it is.
I think that, like, TXA is the precordial thump and then blood is the cardioversion.
Right. So what is, like, the absolute gold standard that you could possibly come up with?
Whole blood.
Whole blood, right? So that's TXA. We understand how it works, how it functions, how it does what it does. It seems pretty useful that I would have something, someone would give me something that would make sure that my clots stayed where they are so I could potentially not hemorrhage anymore. But then what happens? It doesn't increase your carrying capacity. It does not give you any more clotting factors. Like, it can't do anything else. Yeah. So then our options are blood products.
I love it.
Love blood products. So what are the different kinds of blood products?
Well, you got whole blood, you got plasma, you got platelets, you got packed RBCs.
What are, like, the common terms that you'll hear people call them?
Plasma, packed red. I don't know. It just depends where you are, honestly.
I feel like a lot of times you'll hear packed red.
RBCs.
FFP.
Mm-hmm. FFP, yeah.
Yeah. And so there's a bunch of different ways. There's a couple. Different ways you can administer blood. And by that I mean different products that you can give. Why are there different products for blood?
Dollar bills, yo.
Yeah, access usually is the biggest thing.
Right. So way back in the day, they broke up whole blood into different blood products. And one, they're more shelf stable. Well, some of them are. Some of them are not. But also, you could bill for like different products that you need, and so dollars.
Okay, when we talk about blood products, we're talking about packed red blood cells, fresh frozen plasma.
Honestly, that's fresh so accurate. That's how we all have to say it. FFPs.
Or FFP. And platelets. So we're just going to kind of do a little dive into each one of them, their use, what it does, and a little fact about them. So first of all, packed red blood cells. It's used to restore oxygen carrying capabilities in anemia, blood loss, or shock. It increases your hemoglobin to improve oxygen delivery. And a fun little fact about it is packed red blood cells do not contain clotting factors or platelets. It is separate. For FFP, it is used to replace clotting factors in massive bleeding, trauma, liver disease, or DIC. It helps stop bleeding when clotting factors are low. And a little fact about it is it must be thawed before use, which can take around 30 minutes. And lastly, we have platelets. It's used to treat low platelet count or platelet dysfunction, often seen in massive transfusions, leukemia, or chemo patients. It helps form blood clots to stop bleeding. And a little fact about them is platelets are stored at room temperature and have a short shelf life, around 5 to 7 days. So it does not last very long at all. And then, the best one, the big daddy. No, I'm just kidding. I'm going to take that out.
please don't take that out. I mean, honestly, this is the best answer to all your problems.
This is what you have been looking for. Whole blood. It provides RBCs, plasma, and platelets all in one bag, so it's all the blood products still in its whole organic form. It reduces the need to separate for transfusions. Whole blood is making a comeback in trauma resuscitation, especially for pre-hospital use. At least we hope that the goal.
Bingo.
Right, and there are some cool things about the differences, but one big difference is that patients are far less likely to have an allergic reaction to whole blood than split-up blood products, because whole blood is going to be a single donor, and then blood products are multiple donors. So if you just get, like, one unit of whole blood, you have one donor, two units, two donors, you know, it's probably not the same human.
That's a great point to make.
Yeah, and if you break it up, if you get, like, two infusions with like a 1-to-1-to-1 ratio, you could have 6 different donors. And that can be a big deal when it starts to be a mass transfusion.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Thank you for bringing that up.
But the military has time and time again proved that whole blood is superior in most instances.
You know who else has proved that? Austin Travis County EMS. Mm-hmm. You know what they said? According to one of their data points, whole blood reduced pre-hospital mortality by 20% in major trauma.
That's amazing. Crazy.
What the heck? That's wild. Why do we not all have blood on our ambulances?
Right. I feel like that's enough.
That's way enough. Yeah. That's a lot of people.
And San Antonio also, they carry blood.
Yeah, and San Antonio, there's a whole list of things. Yeah. Places in New Orleans now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I put a whole list of them on here.
Yeah, San Antonio has a cool, like, almost like collective where they got all of the surrounding counties. They have like a whole system, like a matrix of blood down there.
And they did it.
Yeah, and it is very, very cool. But ideally, you give both, right? You give TXA and whole blood because we're keeping our clots, adding clotting factors, we're adding red blood cells.
That's ideal situation.
Now, if you don't have whole blood, but you do carry the other friends.
Plasma?
Yeah.
Plasma is a good option.
So if someone says like a 1-to-1-to-1, what is that about?
Plasma, packed red, and platelets.
And a lot of times you'll see that in like a mass transfusion protocol.
A lot of times people won't have whole blood, so you might have packed red and plasma. That's kind of like that is what you see a lot.
Yeah, especially in any like mobile service, whether it's like flight or ground or...
Or like
inner facility
plasma, and might be the only option. Like that's even the case some places. Like it just depends. Why would we just give plasma? That's what I was gonna ask. Why just plasma? Why would you even want that?
Volume.
It's a volume expander.
Ballin'. Explain what a volume expander is.
It expanded. No, I'm just kidding. Get it together. I don't even know how I would put this. Whenever you, so obviously whole blood's ideal. That is literally, we're just putting more of it into you. Plasma is the stuff that like fills all the spaces. I don't know. Is that what you're asking me?
Yeah.
Yeah. It fills all the spaces where there's not like blood cells. It's better than just like washing you out. It's like sticking you together. I don't know. But it's not making clots. I don't know.
Yeah, so a lot of times if your service carries plasma, there a lot of times they're going to call it FFP. It's fresh frozen plasma. It contains clotting factors. And by clotting factors, I mean like all of them. And it will restore coagulation in your bleeding patients. So we've all heard about DIC. And so I had to chat with Soph about this earlier because DIC has never quite made sense in my brain. Because every time I've learned about it, someone has just said they just bleed a lot. And that's the end of the road for most humans. And so with DIC, essentially your body has some sort of event where it senses that it is losing volume. It dumps a bunch of clotting factors into your system. And it's attempting to clot off whatever is happening when you're losing volume. The problem is that sometimes it's like induced by sepsis and things like that. The body just can't always quite identify why we're losing volume. At some point, you're going to run out of clotting factors, and then you're going to have none. And that's where the excessive bleeding starts. You also have TIC, which is trauma-induced coagulopathy. And that happens kind of the way it sounds like it does. You bleed a lot, and you lose a lot of your clotting factors.
Yeah, so someone who has severe trauma, their body can lose the ability to form clots properly. I know this is like your only mission when you're bleeding to death, but our body gets really confused easily. So it just leads to uncontrollable bleeding, even if they're getting fluids and blood products. It's a major reason why these patients die. So like you can give them all the blood products, but it's still just going to keep coming out of the holes.
For sure. Like at some point there needs to be a surgical intervention to stop whatever is bleeding.
Yeah. There's four reasons why this can happen.
What are they?
The blood is too diluted. The blood is too cold. Your blood is too acidic. Or the body just like freaks out and you have some kind of other disease process that breaks down.
Isn't that a bummer? They're like, we know 1, 2, and 3, but 4, you might just...
It might just happen.
Might just be bad. So the FFP, the fresh frozen plasma, it requires thawing before you use it, which is kind of a bummer drag because that's a 30-minute delay. Now, probably not. A lot of times, man, providers get, I would say, pretty crafty with how they will thaw out FFP.
I've seen some weird things.
Oh, yeah. In the pits and everything.
I've literally seen people sit on.
Yep, under their leg, in their armpit. Like, they will do some weird things to get that to thaw faster.
Yeah. So, I know one of those reasons TIC can happen is blood is too acidic. Why do we think that happens? So, in mass transfusions, we can be concerned for some acidosis.
So, a lot of blood products, especially the ones that are broken down into your FFP platelets and your red blood cells, contain citrate.
So that is why we see calcium being administered in these trauma patients and why you may have seen a shift in the trauma triad to the trauma diamond or the lethal diamond. Both are still acceptable.
Oh because my god, why don't we call it the blood diamond?
Why don't we call it the blood diamond?
That would be way cooler. So blood diamond.
Oh, that was spooky.
Spooky.
We have been, like, hyper-focused, or well, I don't want to say we, but, like, a lot of people have been hyper-focused on this whole calcium thing. It's really only a concern in massive transfusion, so don't freak out.
Yeah, citrate is present in small amounts really in these small blood products, and it's an anticoagulant that is used to prevent clotting during storage, which is, like, good news. But the reason we give calcium is because citrate binds to calcium, and so that is going to have a better effect on your acidotic state. Okay, so you go to a rollover. You have a 26-year-old male who is on scene. He has a severe laceration to his lower leg. The police department is currently trying to control bleeding with a belt.
Is he bleeding out?
Mm-hmm.
There's like blood squirting
so
out?
So much.
Really?
Yeah, there's so much happening. So what's the first thing?
That's not where I thought this was
going.
There's
a lot happening, yep. What's the first thing you do?
Direct pressure.
Is the patient awake?
No.
still direct pressure.
Great. What's the second thing you do?
X. A. I'd be like, airway.
Well, ask them why they don't have a tourniquet. Yeah, what the?
Oh, accost law enforcement?
Yeah. Place a tourniquet.
Why didn't they? They love those things.
Yeah, they said, we used it already today.
Oh, on themselves?
Busy day.
Yep. Someone cut their leg on a
That's
nail.
Why I was asking.
On
are
a
rusty
they bleeding?
Nail.
Mm.
Ew.
Yeah. So this patient has clearly lost a lot of blood. It is chilly cold outside.
Are they extricatable?
Yep. Okay. You pick them up, you get them in your truck. Oh. And now you have FFP and packed red blood cells. And let's say that you even carry some platelets. You know, we're getting rascally. Ooh. So you can do a 1-to-1-to-1. With this particular human, what are your concerns about administering those three products right out the gate? We're really good at remembering to make the truck hot because trauma patients can't be cold, right? But then we're going to administer them frozen products.
It's cold.
It's very cold. So you have to be really mindful of your temperature in these patients because you're going to be giving them cold things. And so you want to make sure that you have that truck as toasty hot as you can get it. This is especially difficult in flight because your ability to control temperature is much more difficult.
Honestly, it depends on the truck you're in, too. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's not so good.
That's true. That is true.
Please make your patient toasty roasty and also anything you put inside them.
Mm-hmm. If you start sweating, you're doing it right.
Mm-hmm. You have a 55-year-old male, history of alcohol abuse, vomiting large amounts of bright red blood.
Oh, not the varices.
Ah! He's hypotensive at 90 over 60. And he's tachycardic at 120.
Mm.
Oh, I see Aubrey pulling her phone out.
Yeah, what is that shock index?
What's his shock index?
Shock index is 1.3.
Oh, we're not having any of that. That
That's
is serious.
Bad news bears.
That's high. Okay, so what's the likely cause here?
Esophageal varices.
Perfect. Management. What would, if you had everything at your disposal?
This man is immediately going to... We're going to start blood. We're going to start transfusion.
Cool.
There is almost no way to like tamponade varices.
Not with
so
us.
You just got to try to replace it as they're losing it.
Yeah. I'm giving the blood. I'm giving the TXA.
Mm-hmm.
Do we take the airway?
This is the kind of patient that at some point is going to make you take their airway.
Yeah. But what if we get them...
If you are able... This is
volumed
my,
up.
This is my opinion. If you are able to transfuse them... And get them to where they are still managing their own airway. Mm-hmm. Let them.
Yes.
Let them vomit. Yes, let them get the blood out. Because if it's not going out, it's going in. And so, which normally we like, but not in this scenario.
Not into their belly.
That's also going to be like a really rough airway. Because at any point, there will just be blood pouring out of their esophagus.
I think
you can also cause a lot of damage. And make it worse.
For me, the risk is just really high to take that airway, right? Like, how are you going to be sure? And then the next step is cutting a hole in them. They don't need another bleeding source. I just think that that seems scary. So do everything you can to...
Yeah.
I would, to escape from having to do that.
I feel like that's a human that's going to bully you into taking their airway. Like, it's going to get bad
I need you to quit it.
Yeah, that they are no longer controlling
anything.
Blood and all the things,
Here's another weird scenario that's not trauma. 68-year-old female with sepsis from pneumonia, now worsening with oozing from IV sites, bruising, and low blood pressure, 70 over 40. Her labs, they have an INR, which is your clotting time, of 2.5. Her platelets are 50,000. That is low. And they have a fibrinogen of... 100, which is low.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to help this patient out? They're in DIC. All labs aside, everything is low. Everything's low.
Everything is low.
Everything's bad.
So we have no clotting factors really at all. Well, we're going to give them the things.
Yeah.
This may be a situation where you opt to give, you change your ratio from 1-to-1-to-1. To like 1-to-2-to-1 or 1-to-1-to-2.
So what do you want to give?
So packed red blood cells, because you still want to increase your oxygen carrying capacity. Mm-hmm. But you want to give plasma and platelets because you want to actually give them clotting factor, or give her clotting
That's
factors.
That's the biggest concern.
That she doesn't have anymore.
So do you give TXA? That's what I'm thinking. Is there any clots left? Can we keep those? That is my rationale. I'm not sure if that's real.
I think my pathway is that we're in DIC, which means we're not creating any clots, which is why now we're just bleeding out of random orifices. So I don't know that TXA would matter in this instance at all.
So, do you guys want the answer? Oh, yes. I know I said it wasn't a test, yeah. But I had the answer in front of me this whole time, and I was not actually.
Yeah. Sneaky little bean.
Okay, so no.
You do not give
so
it.
So, here's why. So, it's not always, you can use it. I think that it's like a Hail Mary, right? We're just like, oh no, maybe pre-hospital. If we're in DIC pre-hospitally, and we're just really, may as well, right? That's kind of how I see that part of it.
You got what you got.
But, so obviously DIC is not just about bleeding. There's a lot of things. It's really, really like about the fibrinogen. Like that's what you need. So by the time that they're like oozing out of IV sites, there's a good chance that they don't really can't even make clots or have any clots. So that's why they usually say no, like it's not going to do anything. Not that it's really going to hurt either at this point because if there's no clots. Okay. But yes, the final answer is no, but pre-hospital, we've gone down the path. It's also not going to, it says that you're not going to do any damage.
It's not like contraindicated. Right. It's just, it should not be on your, as far as your like priorities go in the situation, TXA should not be like numero uno.
And occasionally, if you've been septic, if this is like a transfer or something, like they probably have a ton of clots. They're just sitting there like dying. So there's that, but like if we're already bleeding out of everything, meh, you know what I mean? Yeah. It wasn't really a trick. I just wanted to see what, because I didn't know anything about that before I looked it up. But
yeah, interesting.
This says it could be considered in very interesting situations, especially in massive postpartum hemorrhage that leads to DIC.
Mm-mm. Yeah, and that makes sense. Mm-hmm. That makes sense because there's a source of bleeding. So if you can add factors, then you can add, you know, some clots.
It's very
there is.
Honestly, the key takeaway here is like TXA.
Yeah.
TXA is it's worth giving if that's what you have. I think it's like a good takeaway. If that's what you got, it's worth giving. But really try to kind of plow the way forward to get your services to carry blood or at least some kind of blood product.
Blood is the answer.
I will say, we were talking about something that TXA, you can give TXA for in a weird way that I just never thought about it in this light before. So you can give TXA PO for women that have really heavy periods that a lot of times result in anemia.
Way easier to give this TXA in low dose PO than to have to infuse this woman with iron every once in a while.
Well, guys, I think that the takeaway really from this episode is that TXA, kind of maybe, you could not. But it is best when it is paired with blood products. And if you are looking to do the best of the best, it's going to be whole blood.
There's no real substitute for the real thing.
I don't know why it took so long for people to start using it again.
I don't know, but
seems pretty logical. Whole out, whole in.
Right, and you know, I think we overcomplicate these blood product programs. Like, we can do it.
I think you're right.
Try harder, do better. Don't bleed to death.
This has been Life and Sirens, produced by three nerds trying to bring you content that you might actually care about.